And welcome to Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World, giving you choices and knowledge of those choices to help make your dreams come true. Thank you so much for joining us on the program. We do come your way Sundays at 7 a.m. and 7 p.m., Mondays at 1 a.m. And we stream these programs live at those times. The podcasts are also available. They are indeed at SoundCloud, iTunes, TuneIn Radio, Spotify, Stitcher, Player FM, and a bunch of other places. Blueberry is another one. Did I say SoundCloud? When you go to the SoundCloud player, you're going to see a little grocery cart up in the upper right-hand corner when you're listening to an interview. It's going to take you to that particular guest's website. We certainly hope that you will go there. We also hope that you will listen to the podcast because a lot of times these interviews go much longer than the 50 minutes that we normally are allotted for the radio broadcast. So we hope that you will listen to the whole darn thing. Go to their website. Do your investigation, your education, your edification, your inspiration, and continue your evolutionary process. And we also encourage you, if you'd like to support us, you like what we're doing, it sounds like something you'd like to be a part of and you'd like to participate financially, we would greatly appreciate that. We have a SoundCloud or a PayPal and a Patreon account, and that adds extra security for us as well as for you. And so we certainly hope that you will avail yourselves. And if you have, thank you, thank you, thank you. If you're going to, we also thank you, thank you, thank you. We'll take energetic support as well. Today's program, I think you're going to enjoy. I know that I am, because we're going to be talking with the author of, I think maybe it's a rightly titled book. And I'm very excited to have God on our program today, because the title of his book is I Am God. In disguise, so are you. My guest is Craig, and it is pronounced Colavo.
Wow, very good. You didn't even ask me.
I thank you. Colavo, Craig Colavo, and he is the author of this book. And I, of course, obviously, the title is always intriguing. Whenever we do programs, I take a look at the title going, that's, I like that. That brings up a jillion questions just to start. And I thank you again for joining us. And it's interesting. We had a chance to chat, obviously, prior to the interview, but also a couple of days earlier. And I'm always intrigued by this, because there are those who I associated with back in the 80s, early 90s, through a Christian radio station. And if you were to say, utter the words that are the title of your book, I am God. If we were living during the Salem witch trials, you would be tossed into a river, a lake, with rocks in your pocket, and hopefully you would float. But then, of course, they'd kill you because you floated. So you don't. That's blasphemy to say I am God. And yet there are at least one or two, even in the New Testament, passages that make reference to that very fact. I love the one in particular that says, be perfect even as your Father in heaven is perfect. And I pondered that for a long time, trying to figure out, well, what do they mean by perfect? Now, I haven't done the wonderful concordance correlation. I just basically use the meanings coming from, say, the Old Testament as well. And I thought, wow, it doesn't mean to be good or bad. It just means to be. I am that I am. I am God. And so there, we're going to kind of start from there. Who is God?
First of all, I wanted to tell you I appreciate those comments, because you're right. The title has been surprisingly controversial. And, you know, I say surprisingly because, you know, it's not even a New Age message if you really dig down. I mean, this message is age old. I found references to this going back to the Hindu, you know, to the Vedas, the Hindu scriptures, to in Buddhism, and as you just mentioned, in the Bible. The New Testament is full of quotes that reference this very same idea or concept. I mean, I'm not a religious guy, but I was excited to find a couple of quotes I jotted down here. I mean, one of them, for example, is, don't you know that you are God's temple and that God's spirit dwells in you? my favorite one is, I am in the Father, and the Father is in me. The words I say to you, I don't speak on my own authority. Rather, it's the Father living in me, doing this work. Whoever believes in me will do the work I am doing. Well, geez, I don't know, but that sure sounds like I am God in disguise to me. So, you know, the little bit of pushback, I just try to let it roll off my back. There's an author, one of my new favorite authors, well, he's new to me, is a guy named Richard Rohr, R-O-H-R, and he said, and I was listening to him being interviewed recently, and he said, you know what? He said, 2,000 years ago, humanity was not ready for this message. He said, but I believe the time is now. He said, I believe that consciousness has evolved enough that we should be able to, we should be ready to hear this message.
But I'd like to think so.
Yeah, yeah. But you know what? On a lighter note, the title of my book really reflects my philosophy on life perfectly. I mean, I feel like life is meant to be an excited, fun adventure, a lighthearted adventure. And what can be more fun than to be a supernatural being in disguise on a covert mission embedded amongst the sleepwalkers? And, you know, that's kind of the story I'm trying to tell, and make my story, my message is kind of an adventure of the game of life. And that's kind of, you know, it in a nutshell. I feel like as kids, Richard, out of fear, we all create this facade or mask as protection. And in the book, I call it our bodyguard. And this bodyguard kind of leads us into the school of life. And as adults, if we're lucky enough, we awaken and we become aware of our mask. But now we're not hiding behind our mask in fear. You know, we're coming from a place of power. So yeah, that's what God in disguise is all about, and that's what I hope to convey through the title and throughout the book.
Well, it's interesting because it conjures up so many possibilities for us. We sit here on this planet as human beings, and whether or not, and my wife has actually raised a very valid point. I can't argue this point, and I would never try anyway, but she has basically come to the conclusion that we are not indigenous to this planet. It doesn't matter what story of creation you read in any of the ancient wisdom teachings, she says, we're not. You look at every other species. Do you see polar bears at the equator? No. You see them up at the pole. Do you see iguanas at the poles? No. You see them down at the equator or, you know, other warm places, right? So pretty much every species has found its place. They don't go traveling too far outside their, shall we say, climate zone, their ecosystem, what have you. Except for man. Man is the only one who truly needs to build shelters, needs to design clothes, needs for whatever reason also to cultivate crops, and so on and so forth. And then, of course, distribute those crops worldwide in areas where these things don't grow. Which also, in my opinion, violates the natural order of things from the standpoint there's a reason why tomatoes don't grow in the winter. There's a reason why you don't harvest watermelons in the spring. There's a reason why certain things don't grow in certain regions. And it's because whoever the designer was of all of this said, you know what, we're creating this being, or, and again, I don't know if we created ourselves, Craig. Maybe we did, because we are God. But our bodies are like filters. And if we put in these different things throughout the seasons, then the filter is is if it gets clogged in any way, then the new crop that comes in the spring will then help to clear the filter out if we've gotten gunked up and so on and so forth. So there's a whole framework that's going on, a whole protocol, if you will, throughout the, in this case, four seasons for the human body. That's just the way our systems work. But we've mucked it up, especially not just with putting foods in parts of the world they don't belong, but also, of course, the processing aspect. But yeah, the possibilities are endless. When you start saying, I am God, well, what are the, talk to us about the attributes of God.
Right. So, you know, early on you mentioned in this conversation about Christian radio station and heresy and what did you mention, the witch trials?
Oh, yeah, like I mentioned the witch trials, that whole thing. I could even go back to the Inquisition for that matter.
Right. And, you know, when I started reading some of my favorite spiritual teachers when I was early on in as a seeker, I was actually very uncomfortable when some of them, like Wayne Dyer and others, started using the G word too much. And I was curious why it made me so uncomfortable, the use of that word, especially now that it's in big, bold letters on the cover of my book. And I think it goes back to how we define God. So I was raised as Catholic. And, you know, although I'm a non-denominational kind of guy right now, I choose not to pick a team, just my personal preference. But as a kid growing up Catholic, you're kind of taught to understand God as being this external, judgmental being, this, you know, literally this old white man with a flowing beard, sits in a throne up in the clouds, that's there to judge you and to punish you or to pat you on the back when you do good. I mean, Richard, the way I define God now as an adult is, you know, I see God as my life force, you know, more or less a vibrating energy that animates every cell in my body. And this life force not only flows through me, but flows through all of creation. I mean, it's what connects us all. And since energy can't be destroyed, it only changes forms. You know, when these bodies finally wear out, you know, at the end of this earthly adventure, that energy, you know, returns to source. Mm-hmm. So that's how I define God. So now, with that definition, you know, if I was talking about the old school God that I learned as a child, that I, you know, got down on my knees and, you know, looked up to the sky and prayed to, and then to say I am God, you know, no way, you'd be a narcissistic maniac, you know, to feel that way with that definition of God. However, with the definition of God that I just gave, that it's this pure life force that connects us all, I am very comfortable with the title of my book and you know, with what we're talking about here. And your wife's description of, what did she say, we are not indigenous to the planet Earth? Is
correct.
That how she said
That's
it?
What she said.
Well, you know, the first chapter in my book I call Alien Birth.
Mm-hmm.
And she really hits the nail on the head with her observation. I call it alien. It's kind of tongue-in-cheek, kind of humorous, but I love the definition of alien. It's any being foreign to its current environment, an outsider belonging to a very different place. And the reason I love that is I believe we are all pulled at birth. We're all pulled from this invisible world of pure energy into this world of form. And, I mean, Richard, even doctors say somewhere around the 22nd day after conception, this spark of life just appears from nowhere. And, you know, some call it the heartbeat, but it's not a heartbeat. The heart's not even developed and formed by then. So this is God. This is soul. This is the spirit. And yeah, it's like an alien crashing on this planet. Your wife, that's a perfect observation on her part.
Yeah, well,
so, yeah, I like that.
And there are certainly other aspects, and that also raises some interesting questions as to There are one or two organs in the human body which kind of astounds me that medicine has not been able to determine its use. And I think one of them is the spleen. You know, sometimes you get a ruptured spleen and they say, well, it serves no purpose. Well, that makes absolutely no sense whatsoever. It must serve some purpose. You people just haven't gone far enough to figure out what it is. That's my observation.
Yes. Yes, that's very interesting. There are certain parts of us we haven't figured out yet. I guess we're a new species.
I mean, I can't think of any other explanation for it. That must have some use. And then, of course, you know, you hear the saying about our brains that we only use 10% of the capacity of our brains, and I think that's got to be astounding. And if in fact, that is absolutely true. If they've actually been able to map the brain while someone is using it, then they've determined that they're only using 10% of the brain itself. Well, what in the world is the other 90% for? And why aren't we using it for whatever that purpose is? But it goes back to the attributes of God. And the key one for me is the Creator. That God, is not just omnipotent, omniscient, and omnipresent. God is a creator, creating. There are no two oak trees that are identical. There are no two grains of sand that are identical. Of course, they say there are no two snowflakes that are identical, as well as human beings. And so, if I take on the mantle, I am God, and I'm gonna keep it within the proper parameters and outside the ego if I can. I'm gonna try to put it on that higher plane of consciousness, to where I don't think I'm some great thing, and I take on those attributes of God, not necessarily the omnipotent, omniscient, and omnipresent, but the Creator. Talk to us about that aspect of being God in terms of creating a life that I'm happy with, that I'm at peace with, that I can thrive in. And I'm trying to stay away from words, descriptive words, that carry a positive or negative aspect to them. And here's the reason why. God is not dualistic. We live in a dualistic world. I mean, and that's of course what the Hindus say in the Gita that this world is Maya, or it's an illusion. Mm-hmm. And yet, if it's an illusion, it's not real. Then even those things we as gods create isn't real, but it sort of, what do I want to say? Satiates the human palate, so to speak.
Yeah. So how does this whole concept of having the awareness of God in being God in disguise? How does it? If I'm hearing your wondering out loud, how does it affect us? In this life, how do we? You know, what are the rewards of this awareness? Because see, the way I look at it is, you know, as human beings, we want to know what's in it for us on many, many levels, and even to pick up a book and read it. I mean, why should I pick up this book, Craig? You know, what's in it for me? What you're asking is, how can this awareness, you know, lead to a better life? And that's a great question. And to really just take a step back, my message, Richard, in a nutshell, is this. I believe we are all born into this world as body and soul, both equally important for this amazing adventure that lies ahead. So in other words, a perfect combination of human nature and divine nature. I mean, and I call this our primal way or our primal state. And the reason I choose that word is the definition of primal or primordial is an organism's earliest stage of development. So early on in our development as human beings, we fall into this state of temporary amnesia where we forget about this divine part of our being. You know, call it soul, call it spirit, call it God, call it whatever you want. There's no mistakes, though. This is all part of the game plan. And I believe that all experiences during our life are designed to lead us to discovery or to reconnect us to that primal way. And, you know, this sleeping giant that lies dormant within all mankind patiently waits to be discovered. So that is my message in a nutshell. And I've kind of discovered in the writing process that as human beings, we all share the same collective purpose. And actually, this should really be comforting to many. I've been to so many workshops over the decades. I've been a seeker for many, many years, and I've heard people in these workshops being really frustrated or having anxiety over not knowing what their purpose is. Well, I believe we all share the same purpose, and that is to discover the divine within, the sleeping giant, to surrender to that part of ourselves, and then to inspire others on this path. Those three things, in a nutshell, are our collective primal purpose.
Well, I couldn't agree with you more on those points. We're talking with the author of I Am God in Disguise, So Are You. And Craig Colavo is our guest. He has an illustrator for this particular book, Nate Jensen, who drew some very very good designs in here and what have you. I find it interesting, too, you know, you start out the book, you know, you referenced the very first chapter calling it Alien Birth. And many, many people, of course, refer to planet Earth, as you do in Chapter 2, The School of Life. You then have the epic battle. I personally want to skip Chapter 3 and Chapter 4, which is Surrender, and just go straight to Inspire. You know, I mentioned that God is not dualistic. And I myself, I've had enough of the right, the wrong, the good, the bad, the up, the down, the dualism of this world. I do my utmost to stay away from television programs and movies that are of a procrastinator put upons, if you will, kind of a scenario or storyline. And I realize that that's what sells. I get that. I understand that. But we have enough of that in the real world. We have enough of this nonsense of man's inhumanity to man going on. What do we need television programs for? We just put up our cell phone cameras, put it on record or live stream, and just take pictures and just watch, which, of course, was what they call reality TV. And I've been talking with some people over the last few months in particular on this program, one gal in particular who talks about waking up to the fifth dimension. Now, years ago, I interviewed a gentleman who is a physicist who wrote a book called The Fifth Dimension. Had nothing to do with the musical group either. And he and I were walking along. We went to lunch together, and he lives here in Santa Barbara, the Goleta area. We were chatting, you know, and he says, Richard, I can prove to you the existence of the first three dimensions, height, width, depth. Those are easy. The fourth dimension, he calls time. I can't prove to you that it exists, but I can prove to you its effect by just virtue of looking at his watch and that kind of thing. And then he began to describe the fifth dimension, and as he described it, I was actually rather in awe. I'm talking, this is a physicist, the mind of a scientist describing the fifth dimension. And I stopped him and I says, do you know what you've just described? And he says, what? He says, based upon what you've just described, the only word I can use to codify it all down is God. And this other gal is talking about the fifth dimension, where there is no dualism, where we make choices and we do things not for personal self-interest, but for, yes, our interest, but at the same time also for the interests of all, of the whole, of the collective. If I am God and Craig Colavo is God, how do we juxtapose those two beings, if you will, essences, in a world of 7.9 billion people who can say, I am God?
Mm-hmm. So, Richard, it goes back to my definition of God, which is this life force, this pure loving energy that flows through all of us, animates every cell, not only in me, but in you, and also in that tree that you're looking at out your window. So that's where the singular nature of the idea of God rings true for me, regardless of if there's 10 people on the planet or 10 billion. But the idea of the dualistic nature of life, and that's what causes a lot of our pain and struggles and suffering, a lot of our frustrations come from that. I try to simplify the ideas and the concepts that you're talking about, going through, I identify these six stages, which are really simple stages, and you've touched on a few of them. My goal in this book, and I've read, as I mentioned, I've been a seeker for decades. I've read scores of books, quantum physics and every kind of book you can think of related to spirituality, religion, how science intersects spirituality. And it's all fascinating, but I got to admit, I mean, I graduated from college and everything, but it's really complicated, some of these books. And I can't tell you how many times I've read a book that I've read the same page over and over and over again because I'm scratching my head because it's so damn confusing, because I'm reading about, the fifth level and the sixth level of this and the 12th step of that. And you know what, Richard? I don't think it's meant to be so damn complicated. And really, this is one of the main differences in my book and other books in this genre. My goal is to really, really simplify and demystify this path. I want to make it accessible for all, not just for highly evolved spiritual masters who've had near-death experiences or visions. I really think it's intended to be easy. I mean, my original reason for writing this book was to just share some of my experiences with my kids, some of my life lessons, some of my aha moments, so to speak. I don't know, maybe all parents feel this way at some point. Why should my kids have to go through all the same crap that I went through, the pain, suffering, struggles?
Yeah.
So as I've said, I've been a seeker for a long time, and I've been journaling for many, many years. So I pull out this box of dusty journals, and I take on this, this mission of organizing, all of these experiences, the good, the bad, the ugly, the aha moments, and try to put it in some organized fashion so I could share it with them. And somewhere along the way, I don't know, it was maybe 3-4 months into it, I step back, Richard, and I kid you not, it was like the picture just became crystal clear of what this path was and what it's meant to be, and the simplicity of it. And I, it was like someone gave me a secret treasure map, but the joke was this map was in puzzle form, and the pieces were distributed to me over many, many years. So I didn't have access to this map when I was in my 20s. I wish I did. So the discovery, it was exciting but terrifying, because I knew instantly that I couldn't just keep this to myself, or this wasn't just going to be for me and my kids. I knew, for example, that someday I'd be on the phone with you, and I'd be sharing, you know, trying to get this message out to the world. You know, I kind of feel a sense of urgency, to tell you the truth. I mean, I look around the world and see all the chaos, and I feel like I've made some discoveries that would really, really benefit humanity and the path to get from discovering this sleeping giant and get away from the dualistic, you know, part of having this, you know, bodyguard that I call, you know, your separate self, your ego, doing battle with your soul, your spirit, your higher self. We need to get to this point where we become one, like we entered this world, that primal way I talked about earlier. Yogananda called it, he said, when you discover this divine river flowing through you, you need to jump into that river and drown yourself. So getting back to your question, that is the singularity, the unitive awareness, you know, the opposite of duality. And that's the reward of surrender. When you can reach this point where you say, yes, I get it, and I surrender to that part of myself, not only do you see the divine in you, you see it in all other beings. And Richard, the beauty of that is you can no longer define your neighbors as the color of their skin, their nationality, their sexual preference. I mean, all of those labels and layers, those superficial layers, are just peeled away, and now you can see your oneness. Yeah. And that's when the spiritual revolution will take over. That's when there'll be global change, when we could discover, you know, what I'm trying to explain in this book, and to get to that place of oneness, of unity.
Well, I love the fact that you did mention one of my, I will refer to him as mentors, because his book is my primer. I've been a metaphysician since I was around 17. And my primer is the Autobiography of a Yogi. But I have read a ton of books as well, on a myriad of different subjects, just as you have. I've been a seeker. It's funny, too, as a working at the Christian radio station, though I was born and raised Catholic as well, I was asking questions of an heretical nature, and would say that if they want to brand an H on my forehead, I will proudly wear it. Because I don't buy the party line. It doesn't make sense to me logically. These answers that I'm getting from people about the questions I'm asking make absolutely no sense. And it actually took me 5 years to get through and finally accept, not believe, but know in my own heart and mind, through the process of logic, and I consider it critical thinking, there is no entity called the devil, Satan, Lucifer, and all those kinds of things. And what I loved, what really clinched it for me, was when I was interviewing a rabbi, and we were talking about the Torah, and we were talking about the evil that exists in the context of the Old Testament. And he says, there's nowhere in the Old Testament where it refers to an individual who is Satan, the devil, who is the one, the destroyer. Mm-hmm. He says, in the context, so it's extremely important, he says, it's the lowest base nature of man. That I guess you could refer to it as that primal aspect. And there is a way for us to, I guess the right word is overcome, that lowest base nature. We don't have to live there. And what you're talking about in your book, I Am God in Disguise, So Are You, that is something that is absolutely touched upon. And we're going to touch on more of the areas, including I'd love to go through the six steps, although we probably have already done so, in reference to the game of life. We're going to do that, and we're going to continue talking with Craig Colavo, and he has a website. I absolutely love the website. You have a couple of listings in the back of the book, but in particular, it is, and this is the way it's pronounced, folks, Awesome Life, AwesomeLife.com, AwesomeLife.com. And we encourage you to go to that website. You can also check out the book. You can check out a whole bunch of other stuff, and we encourage you to do so. And we also encourage you to stay right where you are. Class is not dismissed, and we will be right back.
Tell me your stories. I'll do my best to understand you.
What did I tell you? We're right back. Here on Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World, we're talking with Craig Colavo, and he has this wonderful little book. That's the beauty of it, Craig, is that it's not a huge tome. You weren't trying to write War and Peace. You didn't need to. You're trying to keep it simple. I Am God in Disguise, So Are You. And it's interesting how in many, many, many of the interviews that I have had over the years, not just with this program, but in other programs, I was actually doing, and this would be a shock to the listeners going back to those 15 years I was there, that I was actually doing interviews like this one. I would have you on one of the interviews that I did, and back then the program was called Fast Forward. And I would have channelers, I would have astrologers, I would have people who were into metaphysics, let alone the New Age movement. We talked about the harmonic convergence, but I used the proper terminology that wouldn't offend. I knew where all of the participants of this station were coming from the listeners to the owners to the advertisers to the programmers, and I just used their words to describe and talk about these concepts. And how can you argue when you find the very words in the very book that is held? It's like, wait a minute, the writers, if you will, of that book, who put it together, I should say, who actually put it together, I say they made a big oops because they left a lot of stuff in there that gives you and I, as human beings or spirit beings having human experiences, the green light to do and become whatever we want in this life. There is not, and then it goes back to what I said earlier about the attribute of one of the attributes, the main one that I look at is creator. And we can create any world that we want, and we can do it. This is, to me, the biggest key, Craig, and I want you to talk about this. And we can do it either consciously or unconsciously.
Yeah, that is right. We are always creating or co-creating, whether we're conscious of it or not. And that's actually one of the big resistors to surrender is it's easier to be a victim, because to surrender, you have to be willing to take responsibility for all of your current life conditions. You have to say, all right, I get it. I created all this crap that I'm surrounded with right now. And you know what? It's easier to be a victim. It's easier, you know, to say, no, I'm not responsible for this. I didn't attract this to myself. But you know what? I'm really kind of shocked. So this Christian radio station allowed you to go off on your New Age.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Now, bear in mind, I also interviewed Christians. We talked about a wide variety of subjects. And I even have Christian authors on this program because I think that their perspective, who knows, maybe it will inspire and enlighten someone. But I'm not going to sit here and beat them about the head and shoulders with my metaphysical concepts. I'm going to be respectful, certainly, but I'm also going to challenge them as well. I had a couple on not too long ago where we talked about marriage. And I said, well, let's define it. Okay. And how is it sanctioned? And does this have anything to do with the state? You know, who cares if the state of California or the state of wherever you live, Craig, gives you a piece of paper that says you are married now and you have this ceremony by this person who is authorized by the state. Who cares? I mean, were Adam and Eve married? Do we know? Who conducted the ceremony? I mean, we kind of went through some of these questions, these hypothetical questions. Mm-hmm. But I also go through this thing, and I have to share this with you because of what you've talked about. Again, this goes back to the concept of using logic. We were given these incredible brains, whether we're using 10% or 50 or 90 or 100% of it. Even if it's just the 10, that's still pretty good. And with that, I came to several conclusions. First of all, if you were to be a follower of the Messiah, of the Christ, the man they refer to as Jesus of Nazareth, the carpenter, I don't see anywhere in the book, old or new, where it says I'm supposed to convert from whatever it is to Christianity. And in the reality of things, again, logic dictating, I actually should become a Jew because he was a Jew. All right. And that Christianity, and as a matter of fact, the word Christian was a derogatory comment by the Romans and the Pharisees. It was a profanity. It wasn't a compliment. And of course, they took it on. But see, I wouldn't even take that on because I should be a Jew by the dictates of logic. Then the head of the church, you and I both born and raised Roman Catholic, right?
Right.
Well, based upon the New Testament, the person who should have been at the head of the church following the Christ's resurrection and ascension should have been Mary Magdalene, because she was the first human being, let alone female, to recognize who he was following his resurrection. As a matter of fact, she went to touch him, and he said, no. I jokingly say he was saying to her, in Aramaic, no, the paint's not dry yet. Don't touch.
Right.
You know.
Yeah, yeah.
So, and then, of course, I also think, too, about Paul, who wrote all those epistles, all those letters to the other churches around. The New Testament would be much shorter if the people in that day just got it. Because that's all those letters are, is nothing more than explanations, answering questions of a minutia sort. If you people would just get off your high horses and stop trying to be superior over each other and just get the message, I wouldn't have to be writing all these letters. You know, my postage meter is getting worn out because you people aren't getting it. And then there's the final part that I'll throw in here. I interviewed a gentleman by the name of John Noe. He wrote a book called The Apocalypse Conspiracy, and I've shared this a few times on the program. And what he concluded was that go ahead and use the word Christian philosophy has nothing to do with anything external. It is strictly not only an internal, and I'll even use this word, it's a metaphysical philosophy beyond the physical philosophy. And that's where people miss it, and they don't understand that even if you were to take a look at Hinduism or Buddhism or any of these other isms that are out there, they're all internal and they're all metaphysical. It's all about the spirit. It's all about that immortal part of us, isn't it?
Mm-hmm. Oh, for sure. And Jesus was a spiritual rebel. I mean, he didn't come to this planet to start a new religion. I mean, if anything, he was here to reform Judaism, as you said. Yeah, he was a spiritual rebel, a revolutionary of his time, to help, you know, awaken this sleeping giant I'm talking about. He knew about the divine within all man that was dormant. And, you know, maybe Richard Rohr, you know, the author Richard Rohr was right. You know, maybe humanity or human consciousness wasn't ready for that message in that time or in that era. But, you know, speaking of religion versus spirituality, I don't even want to say versus, just religion compared to spirituality.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think they have to be, I don't know what that word is, exclusive.
Mutually exclusive?
Yeah. Because, you know, I've had several readers email me and say, hey, we loved your book, and they identify as being very Catholic or Jewish, or even I had some Mormon people email me, and I was surprised to hear a common denominator. They would say, you know, this message is very similar to what we learned in the church or the synagogue or whatever. And I was kind of thrown back at first, but then I came to realize, you know what? This, what I'm trying to explain here in my book, Richard, it's a very universal message. I'm trying to take you back to day one on this planet, to your primal state of being. And this is long before we're separated by any religious dogma, politics, nationalities. And I'm trying to take you back to that point where we were all one. So this should be, this primal way that I'm talking about, should be looked at as a common thread that runs through all religions. I mean, I used to say for decades, I used to say that I'm a spiritual guy. I'm not religious. I'm spiritual.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, lately I kind of squirm in my seat when I hear those words coming out of my mouth, partially because it's become so trendy and cliche to say that. There's been a movement of people away from organized religion. The latest Pew Research survey that was done showed an 8% rise. It's up to like 27-28% now of Americans who say they're spiritual but not religious. And you know, my definition of religion has changed, and I'm not sure I can say that anymore, because really, what is religion? To me, religion is just a set of values, a set of beliefs that we use as a foundation to build our lives upon.
Mm-hmm.
And this primal way of being and to try to help people along this spiritual path from, you know, discovery to surrender and to see our oneness in each other, you know, to hopefully, you know, inspire a spiritual revolution, global change, that maybe that is my religion. And no organized religion should feel threatened by this, because it can either supercharge your existing religion, like I've been told, you know, as I just mentioned, by some of these emails from Catholics and others, or, you know, it could stand on its own like it does for me and be a religion of its own. I mean, what are your thoughts on that, Richard?
Well, I love what the Baha'is say. And I actually was a Baha'i for about a year and a half in the 90s. And I love the phrase, this quote from Baha'u'llah, the founder.
Mm-hmm.
If you accept one of the messengers of God, you accept them all. If you reject one of the messengers of God, you reject them all.
Mm.
And I loved that because it spoke to the unified attribute, if you will, or aspect to all of those who have come to bring us the message, not just of peace, but of love, of brotherhood, of community. And I do have to say that in spite of the fact that I'm not a big fan of organized religion, I have to say there's a sad side to that statistic that you quoted. Because we need community. That's one of the biggest challenges that we face in the 21st century. And it's not to say that we haven't faced it before, but we are facing it here in the 21st century. We are so fractured and so divided that we won't even commune with one another. We have found a way, or we have been shown a way to stay separate from one another. I remember when I first started working for Christian Radio in 1980, that was just when the reports about HIV and AIDS started coming out. And my first thought was, this was back when I had a bit of a belief in the devil, that this was just another way for us to be divided. And as time went on, the organized religions, especially televangelists, began to find other ways to divide us, which really struck me on a sad note, because they didn't want the sinners in the pews. The pews aren't for the sinners. And it's like, not from what I've read from the book you're talking about. That's exactly where the sinners are supposed to be, in the pews. That's why the pews are there. That's why the churches are there, the buildings, et cetera, et cetera. So when you talk about how church attendance is dropping, I'm saddened by that fact, because we, for whatever reason, in the reference to our religion and our spirituality, we need that community.
Right, right. Yeah, when I got to be a young adult, I think I was in college, I took a history of religion class, and, you know, I just came to the conclusion that organized religions have done more during the history of humankind to separate us than unite us. And then that's when I made my personal decision, you know, to be the non-denominational kind of guy that I am today. But Richard, really getting back to that definition of religion again, and you know, having this hope, this desire, being optimistic that these different organizations, you know, should be able to unite, find a common thread, find the common denominators. I mean, the last time I checked, there's 2.3 billion Christians, or people who identify as Christians, 2 billion Muslims, 1.1 billion Hindus. Those are the top three.
Mm-hmm.
I don't want to alienate these groups. If we want to see global change, we need, and that's why my book, I say this book's not about religion. It's not about politics. We need these people. We need these billions of people to awaken. I don't want to just preach to the choir, Richard. You know, we have an audience, you know, those of us who say, you know, we're spiritual beings, we're seekers on this path, you know, we may even consider ourselves, you know, awakened, you know, to the divine within. You know, we're kind of a small little niche in this world. And if we're happy just preaching to the choir, then we're not going to get very far. We need to figure out a way, and that's what I'm hoping my book will do, to be more relatable to the masses. And that's why I wanted to simplify, demystify this message. I wanted to make it a fun, exciting adventure, tell the story the way I see it, and, you know, hopefully attract, you know, more than just the people who are currently in the pews right now. And you know, even the word religion, Richard, the Latin root of the word religion is religare, and it means to bind or reconnect. And that's what I'm talking about here, to reconnect with our primal way, to discover that soul, that sleeping giant that arrived here on this planet with us. And so I'm confident now to say, you know what, this primal way I'm talking about, it is my religion. And if you're Muslim or Catholic or whatever, and it's working for you, great. You know what, this idea of discovering your divine is going to supercharge your existing traditional religious practice. And, you know, one of the biggest rewards of this discovery and surrendering to this part of yourself is now you can't look across the road at the temple or the mosque and say, I hate those people. I mean, it's ridiculous. The concept would be ridiculous. It would be like looking at a tree and seeing two branches on a tree, you know, trying to strangle each other. I mean, you immediately know your oneness.
Yeah.
So I don't know. Am I dreaming?
No.
I mean, do you think there's a chance that we can find a common denominator?
I think that there is, and I think that as we continue talking about this, and hopefully give people sufficient information and reason to find that common denominator. I mean, I used to think, even as a kid, when I'd hear about some of these things going on around the country and around the world, I used to think, how can they think that the other person's different? You cut any one of those people on the hand and they all bleed red blood. Why isn't that enough that we're all red-blooded? Not just red-blooded Americans, but red-blooded Asians and Africans and Koreans and Europeans and on and on and on and on and on. And I thought that would be enough. But apparently it wasn't and hasn't been for centuries. But I still hold out hope as well. I still try to stay optimistic. And I also try to stay away from the one question I was asking for probably about a year and a half, a few years back. And that was... I used to ask my guests, so do you think that you think the human race really deserves to continue? I mean, look at the mess we've made, not just of the planet, but look at the mess we've made with the population. I mean, first of all, it's virtually uncontrolled population growth. Now, I'm not advocating controlled population growth, but one of the things that I do know, there's one of the statistics I have read is that most women who are educated have fewer children. How many children do we need? Mm-hmm. And I understand, and you talk about the primal part of us, I understand the maternal aspects of every woman out there to want to, I guess, have an offspring. And I can appreciate maybe the guys, the men who want to be a father and have an heir or that kind of thing. But I'm just sitting here thinking, you know, how many do we need? By the way, this actually ties into something that a rabbi shared with me in terms of going back to context. You know that one passage in Leviticus that talks about, that is used as the anti-homosexual, I'm going to beat you over the head with it until into submission, a law of the 613 laws that says that a man should not lay with a man, a woman not with a woman, and so forth and so on.
Right.
He says, do you know the context under which that was written? I said, no, I have no clue. He said, it was not saying that it was a sin for a man to lay with a man or a woman to lay with a woman, period. The context was that you do not want to interfere with the procreative process of man. Now, back when that law was written, I would venture there probably weren't even a million people on the planet. I don't know. I don't know what the number was 4,000 or 5,000 years ago, whenever that was written, right? But I have this one question for you. Using that as the baseline and looking at 7.9 billion as the number on the planet, do you think that man has interfered in any way, shape, or form with the procreative process of man? I mean, really? Really?
Right.
I don't think so. So leave these people alone. If they've found happiness and love, leave them alone, you know? If your
right.
sexuality and your relationship with your opposite sex mate is that tenuous, is that fragile that you feel threatened by these other people that you think are going to come into your home, they're going to break down your door and try to convert you, really? Come on. This is one of the things that I remember... I don't know about you. I've had conversations with people who are part of what is referred to today as the LGBTQ community. Mm-hmm. And I would say to them, not during the interview, but after the fact, I said, first of all, I want you to know that I respect the fact that you've come onto whatever the radio program was to share your perspectives. But first, I want to give you some words of inclusion. First of all, because you are a member of the human race, you belong. And secondly, because you were born here in the United States, you are an American. You belong. Period. No more,
right, exactly.
No more dividing or subdividing. And that's the one thing I find so fascinating about people who find the differences, for whatever reason, between us. It's like, so because of the fact that you found this difference, they're not a member of the human race? Or if it's a conversation about people in this country, so they're not a member of the American continent, the population? They're not a member of that group either? Because you found a difference that sets them apart that you don't like, they're not a member of the human race and they're not Americans. Really? Mm-hmm. Where in the Constitution, let alone the Bible, does it say that if I find a difference, they don't belong? I you know, it's like, please,
exactly.
let's wake up. I am God in disguise. So are you. Craig Colavo is my guest. His website is Awesome Life. I love that. I think that's very cool. That's AwesomeLife.com. That's the website, and it's just very cool. I'm going to let you elaborate on some of what I've said thus far, or share with us what it is that you want to dive into here in the last 5 or 10 minutes that we have on the program.
Well, sure. Just to touch on what you were just talking about, you mentioned optimism. I am very optimistic considering the turbulent times that we find ourselves in. And the reason being is there's this I don't know what you want to call it. There's a collective pain and a collective joy principle at work in the world at all times. And to just describe what I mean by that, let me take the collective joy first. A couple of years ago, my son lives in Houston, and our Houston Astros went to the World Series. So I flew to Houston, took him to the game, and the collective joy, Richard, that you felt not only in the stadium but on the street and in the city was just unbelievable. I mean, it didn't matter if you were black or white, young or old, rich or poor. It was like one big group hug. And these high emotional states, humanity rise up and they come together. Now, let's take the flip side of that coin, collective pain. Living in Houston for most of my adult life, I've experienced many, many hurricanes. And there's nothing like a natural disaster to bring humanity together. When the rescue boat, Richard, pulls up to your front door, they're not going to ask you who you voted for. I mean, they don't care what your skin color is or who you share your bed with. I mean, this is collective pain. In these high emotional states, it's baked into our DNA is what I'm trying to say. We come together as human beings. Again, all those superficial labels and layers just peel away. And I believe that this era we're living in right now, the political era, yes, that we're living in here in the U.S., but not only that, globally, look at the world. I mean, temperatures are rising, literally. I mean, look at the streets of Hong Kong. Look at what's going on in this. I mean, people are protesting everywhere. Everyone's pissed off. And I believe this is equivalent to one of those storms that I just explained. I see it happening. I am very optimistic about this. I see human beings coming together, organizing, and standing up and speaking out. I often feel like the minority, a very loud minority, have ruled the often, or too often, silent majority. I mean, those of us who might be on this path, for example, who see, you know, God in all of our fellow beings and that care about all of creation, including poisoning our planet. You know, we're often too damn polite to stand up and speak up. And the result of that is we're bullied by a small minority of people and of leaders. So I think a result of this, and the reason I'm optimistic in these times, is I think people are finally standing up and letting their voices be heard.
So, well, I think it's about time in one sense, and at the same time, I also think maybe that this is the time. I remember an interview I did not too long ago where we were talking about these kinds of things, and the woman says that the spirits on the other side, those who have gone before us, as well as those like guardian angels, those kinds of things, they are calling you and I, and those of us who are here, and, I mean, 7.9 billion, as heroes. Heroes because we chose to come into this world at this time to deal with these particular issues, these particular philosophies that are dividing and subdividing us in that respect, that are distracting us from what you've talked about is our true nature and our connectedness. That's another aspect I'd like to touch upon real quick here is our connectedness. When you say I am God in disguise and you talk about that level of connectedness, would you say that that is also the source, if you will, of our intuition, that still small voice that guides us from day to day?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah, the intuition is the divine part of our nature, our soul speaking to us, guiding us, you know, through the game of life. And unfortunately, through the first few stages of life in our early development, we are totally, completely unconscious of that part of our being, that divine part of our nature. So we've become so accustomed to taking instructions from our separate self, our bodyguard, our ego, whatever you want to call it, that we've totally forgotten about our soul, our spirit, that's in there patiently waiting to be discovered. So yeah, that's Richard. That's one of the biggest rewards of surrender. You now have the greatest partner in the universe guiding and directing you. And you know, life, you know, talk about a life of ease and contentment. I mean, it's amazing, the rewards of surrender. And that's why it became so interesting to me why we resist surrender so much when the rewards are so huge. The rewards are not only huge on a personal level. Let's just talk about a selfish level just quickly, because I know we're running out of time. On a personal level, what happened in my life after surrender was my health improved 1,000%. It's like once you discover this divine part of your nature, you know, that you are a temple of God, you know, it's like, oh my God, I better get my house in order. I mean, if I'm going to be a vehicle for God's expression, I want to be a freaking Ferrari. And so just naturally, you become nicer to yourself. You start exercising, you start eating better, you start drinking more water. You just, in general, you start to become kinder to your body. My relationships improved incredibly. My employees, my customers, I just started seeing them in a different light. And my sales, I've owned my own business for over 30 years now. And it was like day and night from before and after that moment of surrender where I finally, you know, handed over the controls to that intuition part of me that you asked about. My sales skyrocketed. My customers knew sincerely that I was there to help them. My employees knew that I cared about their well-being and their families, etc. So, you know, on a personal level, everything changes. My finances, my business life. But then bigger, this transformation, this personal transformation, as I've repeated a few times, goes global because you can't just keep it to yourself. It starts affecting how you interact with the whole world around you. So when people ask me, hey, Craig, you really think this book can inspire a revolution? Hell yes, I think it can, because it's only just a minor shift in awareness. It's just stop fighting against life and learn to go with the flow and accept this intuition, this guidance. And I really spell it out in a simplistic way in the book. And I really, really appreciate, Richard, you allowing me to just share some of the, you know, at least the outline of this adventure with your listeners.
Well, you're more than welcome. I have enjoyed it thoroughly and sad to see it come to an end because obviously there's a lot more we could certainly put into this and share with our listeners. You and I are like on the same on a similar path. It's funny. I remember saying that I was a seeker at this Christian station, and I was on my search, is the way I put it, actually. And yeah. They said, well, once you find Jesus, you know, your search is over. And I knew well and good that wasn't true. And I even said to them, I says, well, no, actually, once I find Jesus, my search has just begun. And
exactly.
Yeah. Or whichever messenger you choose to follow at the any given point, your search has just begun. And I still remember what the Baha'is used to tell me when they would always tell me, you know, that you ought to read the writings of Baha'u'llah and the other founders and the other followers of the faith. And I said, well, what about the other books that are out there? So, well, no, you're welcome to read those too, but it's always going to bring you back to the writings, to our writings. All right, well, but here was the thing that struck me was they were open to the idea that I could come back to, that I could read other things. They weren't telling me that I shouldn't. Whereas in some of these other philosophies, no, you only read the book that we tell you to read. You know, it's the only one that has the answers for your life. And it's, again, the logic just didn't fit. Very, 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 very interesting concepts that they were talking about. I am God in disguise, and so are you. Craig Colavo is my guest. He has been with us for the past hour or so talking about this cute little book. I really like this. And again, I encourage you to pick up a copy. And you can go through the various aspects here. We didn't really get into the steps per se, but maybe we'll have you back and we'll talk about the steps and talk more about your search, your ongoing journey, if you will, and touch upon some of the other aspects as well. And reminder of the website. I want to give that to you again because I think it's very important, and it is AwesomeLife, AwesomeLife.com. Please check it out. And Craig, I want to thank you again for joining us. And if you ever find yourself out here in Santa Barbara, we would love to have you in studio to continue this conversation. And of course, I even throw it open. We'll grab a couple of beach chairs, take my digital recorder, a couple of microphones, and just sit there listening to the surf roll in and out. And continue our conversation being facilitated by the background noise of the water rushing in and out, and a wonderful metaphor there.
Yeah. I'm going to have to take you up on that one day. I appreciate the opportunity here, Richard. And, hey, real quick, water, I want to mention water.org.
Yes.
100% of ebook proceeds will be going to water.org. They do some fantastic things out there.
Well, we will certainly guide our listeners there and probably even put together a little PSA of some sort to help promote that, because I think that's a worthwhile, absolutely a worthwhile cause. Craig, before I let you go, I do have three final questions for you. And for those of you listening to the radio broadcast, you better listen to the podcast. There's a lot more that we talked about. We hope that you enjoy it. And also go to his website, awesomelife.com. All right, Craig, my first of three questions is, who is Craig Colavo?
I am a spiritual man who is trying his best to be a spiritual leader, to lead other people on this path.
What is it that you hope to or want to achieve through the work that you are doing now?
I want other beings on this planet to discover the joys and rewards of surrender, to discovering the sleeping giant that's lying dormant within all.
And finally, what is your life's purpose?
My life's purpose. Yikes. I just have to double back, is to just inspire others on this path and to be the best person I can be. Sorry if that sounds like a corny answer, but I'm sticking with it.
That's just fine. Everybody's answer is different, and we appreciate that. And again, Craig Colavo, I want to thank you so much for joining us on the program and sharing with us about your little book here called I Am God in Disguise, So Are You. And we look forward to having people going to your website, osomlife.com. Thank you again.
It's been a lot of fun. Thanks.
I'm Richard Dugan. This has been Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World, giving you choices and knowledge of those choices to help make your dreams come true. Until next time, love, Talal.